The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Tuesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, how a traveling violation, in several instances, is how you get to the court, not how many steps you take on it. We once again will don the garb of Prince Hamlet and talk about the role of chance at sport's highest stages. And is it try again in the marketplace against Steve Fisher one more time? That seems to be the case this morning. Once again, we think they may be wrong.
Dave, Tuesday, lots of good action on the hardwoods last night. What's your first take? A little bit of a coaching change? Maybe something we predicted on the show last week, perhaps?
Well, some bad action on the hardwoods last night. And boy, we've been a death knell to some coaches, too. If you go back through all the postmortem coaches that we've told Jacob, you don't have to save that file. We'll never use that picture again. Jack Del Rio, a couple of college guys, and now Flip Saunders. And he went out the way he should. 76ers in the first quarter yesterday threw a punch at his team. His team collapsed. They didn't get back up. That's what we had not seen from the Wizards, is there was no intent to play hard for Saunders. There was a disconnect. They weren't getting it, or he wasn't getting it to them. But as we noted in last week's postmortem, it's not like Saunders had done anything special anywhere. Lousy at Minnesota until Kevin Garnett came on board. What he did in Detroit was actually take a good team and leave it weaker than what he had inherited. And at Washington, boy, just nothing ever went right from the beginning. Not that there's that much potential with this group. There's real bad chemistry with the Wizards, but he didn't come close to getting them to play as a team. All right, you had a big day Sunday at the M. Probably rest, little relaxation last night, and you come in fresh on Tuesday morning with...
We got to talk about what happened at the M because...
Still?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole Mayweather 50 Cent thing we talked about on air yesterday. And, Dave, got to be realistic here. I'm someone, you know, I open my mouth on occasion. I need you to predict an over-under on how long it would take me to issue my first retraction on this show.
Your first retraction? Well, actually, the second show we ever did, you were doing a retraction.
Yeah, it doesn't
so
take
the,
long.
The over-under would have been one.
And probably a good number at that. I got to issue a retraction today, and a modest retraction, but let's talk about exactly what happened on Sunday. I came on the show yesterday and said I thought I saw Floyd Mayweather and 50 Cent betting on New England. Did not actually see them with a suitcase full of, well, I actually did see them with two suitcases full of cash, but I did not see who they wagered on. All I saw was that they watched the Giant game and the first game, the Patriots-Ravens. They looked disappointed, and they left after the game. Well, we saw yesterday 50 Cent came out showing stacks of bills and tweeting that he won $500,000 on the Giants in the second game, which may or may not be true. I don't know. That's the point. I don't know who they actually bet on. And if I said they bet definitely on New England, or if it came out that way, not the case, because two guys I do not want to be mad at me the next time I walk into the end. Hey, I don't want Floyd Mayweather mad at me. And frankly, I don't want 50 Cent mad at me either. So bottom line, don't know exactly who they bet. Maybe they bet both games. Maybe they were so tense during the Giants game Patriots game because they were waiting for the Giants game later. That may or may not be the case. Bottom line, I got to retract it. Not sure that they bet on New England. So there's my 2 cents and a first take for a Tuesday.
There's your 50 cents.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. There's my 50 cents.
I was waiting.
You were waiting. You were waiting the whole first take for that, weren't you?
Pretty much, yeah. And sometimes you wait a long time, you get to that point, and You wonder, what were you waiting for?
I don't know. Yeah. It's kind of like that first take. Speaking of first takes, let's move to MarketWatch right now because we've seen significant money come in on the Super Bowl already. Yesterday, we were talking about some 3.5, some 4s. Man, those got wiped out all. The early money on the Super Bowl has come on the New York football Giants. The 3s are under pressure right now. You can bet New England -3 with plus money in many locations, -3 at even money in other locations. So far, been a deluge of Giants money coming in. Dave, how do you explain it?
We can't, because we would have been wrong on it. Yesterday on this show, we're saying 3 is cemented. If you run a book, you're safe at 3. You just sit there, maybe adjust the money a little bit. You sit there, and you're probably golden all the way to kickoff. That may not be the case. We know a lot of places that are right on that very edge right now of having to go to 2.5. A couple of the offshore places have gone to 2.5, New England minus money. Almost the same vigorish equivalent of the 3 and even or the 3 plus a little bit. They're doing it just to create an alternative, not necessarily a bargain point. But we talked to a few people behind the counter. No one saw it, and they didn't expect to see it happen this quickly. One of the common threads out there was if you like the Giants, and we know one big group that does, you figure to make your bet 10 minutes before kickoff. You let all of the smaller bettors have their New England action, let that line get to a peak, and then grab it. No, we're not likely to see that peak now. Because coming in, most people would expect ticket distribution will favor New England, maybe 60-40 in terms of number of bets made. But money distribution, they thought about a 50-50. That might not be true. The money distribution might be 60-40 Giants. We didn't talk to anyone who expected to see what's happened in the last 36 hours.
And that frankly surprises me a little bit, Dave, because the bottom line is that how can the books not see it coming? I mean, we talked about it, the momentum that the Giants had and the fact that anyone that's made any bet on the Giants any week over the last month has cashed their ticket and in many cases cashed it with relative ease. We talk about what happened in the Super Bowl 4 years ago. We talk about what happened in the regular season this year, both times the Giants winning outright as underdogs over New England. We look at the Patriots last week. Anyone that watched the game knows New England was outplayed. They were lucky to win. If Evans catches the ball in the end zone, they lose. If Cundiff kicks the field goal to tie it, they might well lose. When we talk about the luck factor of the two championship games, for whatever reason, the Patriots are considered to be the luckier of the two teams moving on to the Super Bowl. And all these factors put together, I mean, there's not a sharp bettor that I have talked to over the course of the last 48 hours that has any interest in the New England side. Not many. They look at the Patriots' defense and say, this is a weak defensive team. They look at the revenge angle. They look at all these different angles. And together, I think that even the public's not on New England. You know, you look at the sports options screen right here, you know, seeing the Giants as being the more public of the two teams. Same things when you look at the coverage consensus that the Giants are the early choice among bettors. So the fact that bookmakers didn't see it, that's a little bit surprising to me, Dave.
I think that they thought that the 3 was a good anchor and that the first thing is they thought the public would gradually support New England a little bit because there are public notions. When we do read some of the pro-New England analysis, there's some silliness to it. We've seen several different media sources talk about the New England revenge factor. Now, we're not going to get to the game itself till next Tuesday, but we'll give you one little tip up front. At playoff time, at tournament time, don't ever send us a letter talking about the revenge factor. It does exist in the regular season. Ideally, it's when revenge gives you a motivation edge over your opponent in a game where someone might otherwise be flat. But a motivational edge in the Super Bowl? Like, oh yeah, they got the revenge factor. That'll give them more than the Giants because yeah, it's just the Super Bowl. The Giants aren't going to bring that much. Now, when you get to this level, there are no side motivational factors because both teams are going to bring everything that they have. So tune in next week. We probably won't talk about the Super Bowl again the rest of this week. Next Tuesday, so that you have plenty of time during the week to deal with the information we're going to give you. Next Tuesday will be Super Bowl day, and probably next Wednesday will be Prop Day. We'll do special standalone segments just on those aspects.
Yeah, so we'll break down the side, we'll break down the total, and we'll break down the props. And the props for Super Bowl Sunday, at least in my history, that's where you make the most money. So be sure to tune in next Tuesday and Wednesday. Big time Super Bowl previews right here on Vegas Sports Day. Dave, we got a letter that is certainly worth talking about today in particular. This is from Kevin in Fort Collins. Sent us an email, quote, "I think about my days in college and remember how different my sleeping patterns were as opposed to now, later in life." Me too, Kevin. Yeah, you wouldn't see me on this side of noon when I was in college. But those days, obviously, once you get out in the real world, sleeping patterns do change. "Let's face it," the letter email continues, "college kids stay up late and party. Even the most focused players might not be morning people. That being said, do you think it would be worth betting the first half line against teams that have to travel and wake up early?"
It's a very good question. We got a bunch of good ones so far this week, and we will get to every one of them. We focus on this today because when we come back in the postmortem, we're going to be directly on that very topic. And again, the old notion of preview and review, not just looking to play against the team in this setting, but making sure you adjust the game accordingly after the fact. Question I got, Kevin, though, is if you're in Fort Collins now, if that's where you also went to school, for people that don't know, that's Colorado State University. Fort Collins, a great, great town on the Front Range. That you're getting a little bit of that modern aspect from Denver heading north, but the cowboy aspect coming in from Wyoming heading south, an old town in Fort Collins. Really, really a charming place. But here's one for you, Kevin, and I hope you did this as an undergrad, or if you lived there, you still do now. Once upon a time, when we had a good friend who worked at the university, we really enjoyed at Cooper Smith's. We thought that green chili ale was one of the better Bloody Mary mixes that you could find anywhere. Liked it better than any type of vodka. But that green chili ale over at Cooper Smith's made one heck of a Bloody Mary. Write back in and let me know if they still do and if you've had one.
Yeah, and turn to the answer to the question. I spent a summer in Fort Collins. Summer of what? 95. Good time in the Fort Collins area. But that's way in the past. We have to talk about sports and sports betting. First half lines against the road teams. This is my issue with that. I've had some success betting on some of these road teams in early start games on the highway. And the thought process here is this. Road team is going to travel together to the game. They're going to stay in a hotel in town the night before the game. They're going to have their wake-up call together. They're going to have their breakfast together. They already have their act together when it comes to being focused for an early start game. That's not always the case for the home team, where they're not necessarily staying in a hotel the night before. They're not necessarily, and they're more likely to be in their regular rhythm, which may not include, 9 a.m. or 8 a.m. or 7 a.m. wake-up calls. So I find, just again, this is not something that's based on a hard statistical study of every road team or every home team, but my experience has been sometimes you find the road teams actually come out with a little bit more focus and a little bit more prepared.
Unless you're the Purdue Boilermakers, on Saturday in East Lansing, Michigan, which we've got coming up in about 2 minutes.
Yeah, speaking of coming up, keep those emails coming in, guys. Anand, this is a good one from Kevin. We, as Dave mentioned, we got a bunch of good ones this week, and we will get to every quality email that we get. Send them in, sportsday@covers.com. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter, @VegasSportsDay. You can get involved in the covers.com community. covers.com/posting forum. And let's not forget that Super Bowl party. It's not too late to make your plans to come to Vegas. You can make reservations right from covers.com. travel.covers.com, I should say. And of course, you can just send an email if you want to come. party@covers.com. That party at the Munch Bar at Caesars, right next to the race, or right, actually down the hall. Great location. Dave scattered out over the last couple of days. Looking forward to seeing as many of you there. Again, send those RSVP emails, party@covers.com.
Eight more shows where we have to hear him do Munch Bar.
That Munch Bar.
Yeah, we're going to make it up for you. Okay, on the road, you stay in a hotel, you have breakfast together as a team, you're ready for the game. What if you got a six-hour bus ride that just barely gets you there in time for tip-off? We're going to talk about that when we come back. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers the numbers.
I'm Courtney Leone. Vegas Video Network.
You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then, okay.
Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gowns on. We're going to head into the postmortem, a trip deep inside the game to show you the things you should be seeing, but probably aren't.
Yeah, we could cheat sometimes with photos. We can show a guy taking a shot, and we have no idea whether he made it or not. But not in this case. Robbie Hummel missed this shot. We know because at Michigan State on Saturday, Robbie Hummel missed every shot. All 11, 0 for 11 from the floor for Hummel. Hummel and his Purdue teammates were trashed. 83 to 58 in East Lansing on Saturday. They made only 18 of 62 shots from the field, including an awful 3 of 20 from three-point range. Since they were only 7.5-point dogs in that 25-point loss, it can lead to some significant adjustments. We'll talk about the two teams' power ratings. You naturally think about lowering Purdue and also raising Michigan State. The game was so one-sided that Tom Izzo had 16 different players take the court. How many times did the team even dress 16 players, let alone get them all on the floor? But before you make your adjustments, you might want to hold on a second. This final score may not mean anything near what it would appear to.
Should actually leave the photo up for an extra second. I think one of the guys in the background in the bleachers was in the game at the end for Michigan State. He was one of those 16 players. I swear, he looked just like him. What do we do with a game like that? Let's set up how it happened. The Purdue kids went to the airport at 6 o'clock on Friday, where they thought would be a short flight over. They didn't board their plane until 9 o'clock. Because of the weather, the plane that was coming in to pick them up from Milwaukee didn't get there till 9. So you've already been at the airport for 3 hours. Now you get on the plane. But because the plane had come in from Milwaukee, it needed to be de-iced. And they struggled with it because it was in a winter storm. So they sat on the plane on the runway from 9 o'clock until 12:30 a.m., 3.5 hours. And you can imagine, as a college basketball player, the size they are, being cramped up in a plane, especially because you already had dinner. You thought you were going to fly at 6 o'clock, so you're sitting there. You've got no food. You've got not much going on. 12:30, they said, time to give up, because even if we can de-ice, the other airport will not accept the flight. So what do you do now? Well, you go back to your apartment for a little bit, because, guys, meet at Mackey Arena. Our bus is going to leave at 4:45 a.m. It's about a four-hour bus ride. They thought, no problem. Well, that four-hour bus ride, on a bad wintry morning, became a six-hour bus ride. They barely got to Michigan State in time for the game to be played. And, of course, it shouldn't have. It should not have tipped off at that time. But guess what? CBS, national television, they were not going to move that game. So, Purdue, tough luck for you. Let's talk about Robbie Hummel a little bit, because he describes this ordeal pretty well. We were on the plane until, like, 12:30 a.m., went back to the locker room, and hung out and tried to figure out what we were going to do. I didn't get back to my apartment until 1:30, went to bed about 2. I woke up at 4:30 and didn't sleep much on the bus. I'm not the type of person that can do that. So now what do we do with this result? Hummel's out of sorts, misses every shot he took. The team's out of sorts. They play poorly. You don't want to penalize them too much for this, but at the same time, you don't want to reward Michigan State too much. It's not just power ratings. It's statistics. When we talk about defensive numbers, Michigan State gets a credit there they don't deserve. Offensive numbers, Purdue's penalized. They don't quite deserve that. So make sure when you take a game like this, do your proper adjustments moving forward. It's going to be a big part of setting your handicap. This next segment's going to be a little painful. Teddy's going to have to relive kind of an awkward Sunday afternoon that many of you also had as well, watching the 49ers and Giants on Sunday. But it gets back to something that is so important in sport. Yesterday we talked about that notion that in sports they crown champions, but you don't always have a champion every year. They crown one because if you win this particular game, you get that regardless. Shakespeare taught us sometimes that kings are just men. And now, of course, it becomes a little bit different as we move forward. A bounce of the ball and what it can mean in terms of one team winning a championship, one team being eliminated, not how well you played, not how well your opponent played, but sometimes just the bounce of the ball itself. So to set this one up, we go back to Act 1 of Hamlet, scene number 3, and what better than Hamlet on stage saying, "If chance will have me king, why chance may crown me."
I can't believe we're going through this 49er game. This was, I took a beating on this game. Let's make no mistake about it. Really looking forward to breaking it down right here. But the bottom line is we have to. There was a poignant photo taken of Kyle Williams before Sunday's NFC Championship game. This is a guy who had caught only 21 passes in his two NFL seasons and was now being asked to step up and play a key role with Ted Ginn Jr., who was questionable, unable to suit up. Williams was going to become the primary punt returner, despite only having returned 5 punts in his NFL career. It's something that truly could have been taken out of Shakespeare. You know, a lead player unable to take the stage, and his understudy takes his bow and prays that he can take on that lead role. Except, we all know how that turned out. Yeah, we'll go through it again, but it's important to do in order to properly understand how the Patriots and the Giants both arrived here in Indianapolis and put those paths under the proper scrutiny. When the 49ers scored with 5:18 left in the third quarter to go up 14-10, their defense stepped up in a major way. The next 3 Giants possessions, they had a total of 1 first down, only 10 plays, netted just 12 yards in those 3 possessions. San Francisco was in command. The Giants were pinned back at their own 15-yard line. There was 11 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and San Francisco had a chance to get some field position and put the game away. Mike Weatherford got off a rather average punt. It came up short of where Williams was. But instead of completely getting away from the ball, Williams made the costly decision to maybe try to pick, I don't know what I'm going to do with it. He wanted to be close enough so he could pick it up, I guess, instead of letting it roll for too many yards. Well, he was just close enough for the ball to take an awkward bounce, graze his knee, and, of course, it became a turnover. And 7 plays later, the Giants scored the go-ahead touchdown to go up 17-14. It's worth noting that the touchdown pass from Eli Manning to Mario Manningham that beat second-year cornerback Tremaine Brock, who had to fill in for the injured Terrell Brown, who was hurt on 1 of 2 sure Eli Manning interceptions where the 49ers defenders point into each other. Happened twice. 2 sure INTs. Well, in this instance, the key player got hurt. His backup gave up the touchdown. Another bounce that went against San Francisco. I don't even know if that Manningham touchdown happens if Brown is on the field. So, game goes into overtime. San Fran still very much alive, and the 49ers defense with a huge stop on that second giant possession of the OT. You know, New York was 3rd and 3 from the San Fran 46. Boom, they sack Eli Manning again, and Weatherford's got a punt again. And, of course, we all know what happened this time. Instead of redeeming himself, Williams fumbled again. This time, the Giants recovered at the 24, ran the ball a couple of times, kicked the game-winning field goal. The 49ers' defense was tremendous in that ballgame. They allowed only 3.9 yards per play. They knocked Manning down 20 times. The offense struggled, but the offense did not turn the ball over on any of their 57 snaps. Sometimes, comes down to a bounce. Giants, the beneficiaries of that bounce. That's why they're in Indy next Sunday.
And chance may crown them king. You think we've talked about travel a lot on this show? We haven't even started yet. When we come back, it's money time, and the Indiana Pacers take a little different route home for tonight's game against the Lakers, or Magic. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Okay, guys, it's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's go to Indianapolis, where tonight, Indiana, the Pacers, -3 at home against Orlando. And you watched the Magic play last night. Well, you didn't actually watch him play. You just watched him lose because it was an historically inept performance from Orlando in the second half of that ballgame. 10 points in the third quarter. They followed up with 10 points in the fourth quarter at Boston. This is a Celtics team playing without Rajon Rondo, Ray Allen, or Michael Petras. 5 made field goals for the entire second half for the Magic last night. All-time franchise lows for both points and field goal percentage. A chance for redemption 24 hours later at Indiana, or another spot for the Magic to get wiped out?
It's a spot where ordinarily we'd look to play against the Pacers. And long-term NBA bettors would know a lot about this. When you have a long West Coast trip as an Eastern team, or vice versa, that first home game is often very difficult. We forget sometimes that they're not just players. These guys have lives. When you're away for a while, that first game back, there come the bills you have to pay. Here are the wives, the girlfriends, those other obligations. You sort of get crowded in a little bit. Indiana would have been in that situation if you saw they played the Lakers in L.A. on Sunday night. Now, they tried a little bit differently. They stayed in L.A. They didn't fly back until yesterday. Take this from Frank Vogel. He says, we haven't done this in the past. We always struggle in the first game back from the West Coast trip. In my mind, I wanted to try something different, especially with the quick turnaround. Are they vulnerable here? Well, not only did Orlando melt down on the court, but Orlando, after the game, showed signs of mentally melting down as well. I don't know if we want to trust this team tonight.
Oh, yeah. Look at some of these quotes from the Magic. This is from Dwight Howard, who played more than 35 minutes on the floor last night, despite it being a blowout loss and the first night of back-to-backs. Howard, quote, we didn't stay together. We started blaming each other, and I have to do a better job of policing that, me being a captain of the team. Here's from Jameer Nelson. One through however many we have on our roster, we couldn't execute our offense. Defensively, we didn't help each other. It was just a selfish game from everybody. It was just very selfish. And here's a quote from Avery Bradley, the Celtics' third-string point guard, or fourth-string point guard, or whatever he is, who got ample playing time without Rondo last night. He was interviewed on NBA TV after the game talking about Jameer Nelson. Here's what Bradley said, quote, he seemed like he didn't even want to bring the ball up. I looked at him, and he kept telling me throughout the game, you know what, don't pick me up, don't pick me up. And that's when I knew if I brought pressure, he didn't want nothing to do with it. So, Orlando, there are some issues here for the Magic. No question about it right now. And, you know, this is a team that we're going to see what they're made of in Indiana tonight. It's no surefire bounce-back spot for the Orlando.
That Avery Bradley quote is frightening. You know, I think if you're Boston, if you're Doc Rivers, one of the first things you probably do today is sit Bradley down and say, you don't say that. Even if you believe it, you don't say it publicly. Travel comes into play in yet another game today. Let's go to the Rose Garden in Portland. Right now, the Trailblazers, a 5.5-point favorite over Memphis. Yeah, we talked about the rigors of this NBA schedule, all the difficult adjustments. Well, tonight is the first time all year the Grizzlies have had to play back-to-back games on the road. Boy, a tough path to get here. If you went to bed early last night, you missed a fantastic finish at Golden State. Memphis trailing by 16 in the fourth quarter, puts on a wild chase and scramble, comes back and wins the game. But often when you do that late night on the road, you do that at a cost. First, keep in mind, there's a team from the Central Time Zone. You're playing out west. When you hustle late in a game, you're getting to bed several hours later than usual in terms of that recuperation time. But now look at the minutes. They played last night, so did Portland. 4 Memphis players played more minutes than any Portland player, including Rudy Gay playing over 43 minutes for Memphis. Could it be that Memphis might show a little bit of fatigue in Portland tonight?
Well, it's not just the second night of back-to-backs for the Grizzlies. It's the fourth game in 5 nights for Memphis. And they've been winning. Obviously, 7 wins in a row for the Grizz. They're playing their best ball of the season by far right now. But before they give them too much credit, 6 of those 7 wins have come against teams with losing record. records. The only victory against a team with a winning record during that span came an early start game on MLK Day, where the Chicago Bulls were without Derrick Rose and Memphis was in serious revenge. That game was over by halftime. But the Grizz have been feasting on the week and now certainly face a very difficult travel-slash-scheduling spot this evening. And meanwhile, Portland, you know, did not play well on their road trip. 2-4 on their East Coast wing. Came back last night against Sacramento, and they breezed to victory. They were up 20 by the half. Really never looked back. The lead was never cut to single digits, as Dave mentioned. Four different Grizzlies players played more than any Blazer player in that ballgame. And it's also worth noting, you know, that some of the issues for Portland that we've talked about on this show, maybe some depth issues for the Blazers, some interior play issues, some issues with the second unit, well, some of those issues might have gotten resolved last night. Jamal Crawford, who struggled all year long for Portland, he was their big signing in terms of free agency, and he's been a bit of a disappointment, not last night. 26 points, 5 assists. His quote, "I cleared my head and said, this was day one all over again." And it certainly was for Crawford. Gerald Wallace, he probably had the most minutes in last night's game. But, of course, this is a guy who missed the previous game, a bad loss at Detroit. He should be relatively fresh here. And maybe a missing piece for Portland is starting to come together. Craig Smith, the Rhino, as they call him, on the inside. 20 points, 12 rebounds over the last two games. Here's a quote from Nate McMillan talking about Smith and the rest of the second unit. Quote, "So we've got that balance with the second unit now. It's not just jacking jump shots up. We have an inside presence that we can go to."
Up next, the focus shifts to the college basketball hardwoods. And yeah, we're going to talk about travel issues yet one more time. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
We've talked about the NBA. Now let's get into money time number two. We'll break down some key games on tonight's college board. How about this one in West Lafayette, Indiana, where the Purdue Boilermakers, about a 5-point favorite over the Michigan Wolverines, total in that game sitting around 127. And we talked about Purdue, obviously, on today's postmortem, talking about how you just want to take that loss on Saturday and just wipe it from the books. Don't even look at your records. Not something that you can take forward, except for that maybe Purdue brings a little bit of extra motivation tonight after that embarrassing wipeout. But we talked about Robbie Hummel's struggles, 0 for 11 on Saturday. This is nothing new or different for Hummel. 10 of 42 from the floor in his last four games. Obviously, Purdue needs Hummel to find the bottom of the basket, not just the rims, if they're going to be able to be successful in this point spread range tonight.
Almost leads us to one of these little shift gears type of notions here. Purdue off of an abnormally bad offensive game on Saturday. Michigan, Hardaway, one of the better offensive players in the Big Ten, 1 for 19 from three-point range in conference play. You got two good shooters off of bad slumps. Do we sense it? Maybe here comes this little pendulum, or maybe there's a bit of a breakout because the markets have been betting the game under this morning. Total open 130, saw it down around 127, 127.5 before we went on the air. Looking to maybe shift gears here a little bit, except there's a concern. Purdue grinds on defense about as well as any team does anywhere. John Boeheim talked about this in a pregame conference yesterday. He's got Trey Burke, a freshman point guard who has been playing very, very well. Chance maybe to be National Freshman of the Year. In Big Ten play, 17.4 points, 4.4 rebounds, and more than twice as many assists as turnovers. That's awfully, awfully good. But this is Burke's first game against this physical Purdue defense. It's coming on the road where Michigan hasn't won yet this year. And it's coming against Lewis Jackson, a tough senior defensive point guard who probably isn't going to see much from Burke he hasn't already seen from others. So we want to think over a little bit here. But can we trust Michigan to get into their offense in this environment tonight?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Michigan struggled to get in their offense at Arkansas the other day. They shot the ball very poorly for the game, and yet they still were able to rally back and make things very interesting for Arkansas backers in the final minute of that contest. Ended up losing by two. The quote from Boeheim, quote, "If anything, it should give them confidence that you can have this bad of a game as far as guys having horrendous shooting nights, but still be within an inch of winning that game. Hopefully, it keeps them believing in themselves more." So Michigan, in terms of a confidence standpoint, for a team that hasn't yet won on the road, you know, they went to Indiana and lost by two. They went to Arkansas and lost by two. And remember, they were down, they were getting blown out in that game. They were down by 20 in the first half. 16 at the break, I think it was. So it's a Michigan team that's shown some character in hostile environments, and it's a Purdue team underachieving a little bit right now. I'm in no rush to buck Boeheim and the Wolverines as underdogs, even though, as Dave mentioned, still a team looking for that first win in a hostile environment.
Let's go to Laramie, Wyoming, where the betting markets are getting involved against the Fisher again. We talked about this on last Wednesday's show. We cashed an easy play of the day winner with San Diego State at New Mexico. Look at these Mountain West games, the way the lines moved. UNLV opens a one-point favorite at San Diego State. Goes to 3.5. Aztecs win the game straight up. New Mexico opens 8.5. Goes to 11. They win that game straight up. Saturday night Air Force opens 14. Closes 11.5. Game falls in the middle, 57-44. But only those that grab the 14 win it. Now for tonight, San Diego State opens -1. Went all the way to Wyoming 3, then peels back to 2.5 again. Is this the same market money trying one more time? Or is there something else involved? Do they think they might have a little travel tidbit they're putting to play?
Hey, today's show is all about travel. And guess what? San Diego State had travel issues going up to Laramie for this ballgame. Instead of a commercial flight to Denver and then a long bus ride, San Diego State rented a charter to fly directly into Laramie, but they had to stop to refuel in Cedar City, Utah, and then they got grounded by the weather. So ordinarily an 8-hour total trip when flying commercial from San Diego and also busing up to the game following the flight to Denver, in theory it was going to be shorter. In fact, it turned out to be longer. But here's a quote from Steve Fisher, which is meaningful in my mind. Fisher, quote, "We're telling our kids we're spending a lot more money on you for these reasons. And it's going to be a huge benefit for us to get in and out the way we do and to get out the way we do. So let's make sure we take advantage of it. We appreciate it and make it work." So obviously, San Diego State, they're paying the big-time dollars for these charter flights now. But, of course, the team spent last night in Cedar City. They did have the ability to set up a film room and go through some Wyoming stuff, and then the charter took off again this morning to head to Laramie. So, yeah, some travel issues for San Diego State, no question. They're in town, and they've had a chance to look at the film. Now they'll have a chance to go through their normal pre-game routine on game day.
So how much do we adjust for this? Not much at all. When we talked about Purdue-Michigan State, that was going into an early start. That was game was starting at 11 o'clock local time for Purdue. That was very, very difficult for them. It's a different story. It's a night game. They were going to be in Wyoming in time for lunch. Kids can take a nap in the afternoon, have a shoot around. It shouldn't impact them that much. So now it gets back to the basketball equation here. Wyoming 2.5. Look at these last two seasons. 10-21, 3-14 in conference 2 years ago. How about last year? Same thing. 10-21, 3-14. There is not a legacy here. Yeah, they play good defense under Larry Shyatt. And we'll give them credit for that. It's fundamentally sound defense. But look at who those results have come against. According to Jeff Sager, the number 317 schedule. According to Ken Pomeroy, the number 319 schedule. That's awfully, awfully weak. The only good team they've played in conference play so far, New Mexico, on this court, New Mexico wins by 10. The same New Mexico team, San Diego State, beat on the road in Albuquerque last week. So, Teddy, yeah, we got some travel issues here, but at that 2.5, is it enough to take to the basket?
Yes. You know, I mean, it's going to be a big crowd in Laramie tonight. They're gearing up for the game. Guess what? This is a team that hasn't faced any pressure that now all of a sudden has expectations and pressure. Not only have to win, they got to win by margin against one of the toughest outs in the Mountain West Conference, a team we cashed with last week and a team that I expect we're going to cash with again tonight, Dave. play of the daytime, that's San Diego State, plus the 2.5 in Laramie against Wyoming. Take the Aztecs plus the points, and maybe you take just a tidbit, San Diego State on the money line. It's a game that I expect them to win. And that's going to wrap it up for the Tuesday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Sabransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll see you again mañana.